Hey there, Dave Robinson here, and you are now listening to the 196th episode of Bench Talk, the Week in Science. We've got another great show for you this week, and I don't know if you caught our episode from last week or not about air pollution coming from Rubber Town in western Louisville, but we didn't quite finish discussing that important local example of environmental inequity right here in Louisville. But we do have some pressing stories for this week that we felt were important enough, timely enough, and interesting enough that we wanted to get them on the air as soon as possible. Because of that, we'll just continue with our story on Rubber Town pollution in our next episode rather than this one. Today we'll be discussing the Kentucky General Assembly in Frankfort and what important science and education bills were passed there this year. Then we'll hear about what cool stars and constellations we can see in the night sky during the month of May. And then in honor of National Kidney Month in March and World Health Day, April 7th, we'll hear about the anatomy and physiology of the human kidney. We'll end the show with a personal challenge to you. What scientific or technological changes do you think we will experience in the next 6 years? Yeah, between now and the year 2030, how will our lives be affected, either good or bad, by the scientific or technological advances that have either recently occurred or are going to occur? So let's get going. Here is Rob Weber of the Kentucky Academy of Science telling us what happened in the Kentucky legislature this year.
Kentucky state lawmakers have wrapped up work in their 2024 legislative session. Once again, scientists on the Kentucky Academy of Science Policy Committee stayed involved in this session, tracking bills, sharing information with lawmakers, basically trying to give the science community a voice. And now we're here to report on what happened to some of the science and the education and the environmental bills we have followed since the start of this year. And we begin with a big issue for the science community, dealing with scientific research at Kentucky's universities. Senate Bill 1 will establish the Endowed Research Fund to fund research at university consortiums. So the idea is that this bill will prompt universities to work together, for two or more universities to come together on research projects, to work together and apply for funding from this endowed research fund. Now, the legislation designates one of the first such consortiums to be in line for money for this fund, and that would be the Kentucky Spinal Cord and Head Injury Research Trust, which is comprised of researchers at both the University of Louisville and the University of Kentucky. It's been around for a number of years. They do world-class research. They've been recognized throughout the world for their breakthroughs. And then it would be up to the Council on Post-Secondary Education to pick up to four other research consortiums. So this legislation is going to establish these funds and the parameters for them, but the job of actually putting money into this research fund is still ahead. So this fund can be supported through state appropriations, federal appropriations, contributions. But to hear Senate President Stivers talk about it, you know he's thinking big. He expresses an appreciation for the research being done at universities, the potential for it, and frankly, he has big dreams about growing Kentucky into a major research state, and he sees this bill as being a vehicle to accomplish that. Another education matter that lawmakers dealt with this year has to do with teacher retention and recruitment. They passed legislation on this issue to create a teacher recruitment student loan forgiveness pilot program, basically to forgive student loans for teachers who perform a certain amount of eligible service teaching in Kentucky schools for a certain amount of time. And then this legislation will also create another pilot program, a student teacher stipend program, to help supplement the income of student teachers. Again, both of these are pilot programs. On the environmental front, a lot of people paid attention this year to legislation that would create more hurdles for utilities who want to retire their aging coal plants. You might recall last year, lawmakers passed legislation that would says certain hurdles must be cleared before the Public Service Commission could approve the retirement of a coal plant. Well, lawmakers came back this year with more legislation to establish a commission that would review such plans to retire plants, basically adding another layer of bureaucracy that utilities would have to go through before they could phase out their fossil fuel burning plants. Obviously, there remains strong coal interest in Kentucky, but this was a bill that environmental groups throughout the state were clearly unanimous in opposing. Also on the energy front, lawmakers passed Senate Bill 198, which would establish the Kentucky Nuclear Energy Development Authority to support and facilitate the development of nuclear energy ecosystems across the Commonwealth. Now, you may recall it's been more than 10 years since the state lifted its moratorium on nuclear power in Kentucky. But what happened since that time? Natural gas has gotten cheaper, and so there really hasn't been a demand here for nuclear power. But lawmakers have returned to the issue. They want to create this authority in the state to basically clear the way for the possibility of nuclear energy, because it takes many years of planning for such a thing to happen. It requires major efforts to educate a workforce, create the infrastructure, clear the construction plans. And obviously, it's not something that everybody's in favor of. Nuclear energy has had a contentious history. People concerned about the safety and the environmental waste caused by them. However, there is growing acceptance for the modern proposals for nuclear facilities, which would be safer, a smaller footprint, less waste to deal with. So this legislation passed with very few votes cast against it, even though there are still obviously environmental groups throughout the state who are wary of nuclear energy. But acceptance is growing, and the country is frankly counting on nuclear energy in its plan to power the country while still meeting carbon emission goals. On the healthcare front, one of the major breakthroughs of this session was the passage of legislation that was known as the Momnibus Bill. This seeks to lower the troubling maternal death rates in Kentucky. So this is a maternal health bill that would improve healthcare by expanding access to prenatal and postnatal and mental health care for new mothers. It would add pregnancy to the list of qualifying events for health insurance coverage. It would improve mental health care for new moms. It would require Medicaid to cover lactation consulting services and the cost of breastfeeding equipment. And it would require the state HANDS program, which is a voluntary program that assists new parents. It would require the HANDS program to provide information to parents on safe sleep and lactation consulting. Now we'll turn our attention to an issue where, even though lawmakers have had their say on the issue, it's ultimately going to be settled by the voters of Kentucky. That's because House Bill 2 calls for a constitutional amendment that voters will decide on this November that would allow taxpayer money to go toward private schools. Now, you may recall, lawmakers have passed legislation in recent years to attempt to allow private schools to receive some public funds. That was found to be unconstitutional because our Constitution clearly says that money for public schools has to go to public schools. So lawmakers are now trying to change the Constitution. So people who tend to favor this legislation consider it a school choice bill. People who oppose it see it more as a raid on state tax dollars. Issues concerning public schools in Kentucky have received tons of attention in recent years, so this is certain to get a lot more attention as we get closer to the November election where people will vote on this. Well, constitutional amendments have a history of being difficult to get approval for in Kentucky once they're put in front of voters. So how this is going to go is anybody's guess, but we know we're going to see huge publicity campaigns on both sides of the issue in the months to come. And last, I want to cover a piece of legislation that actually had its origins in a suggestion from a Kentucky scientist. Dr. Trent Garrison is a geologist. He's a former president of the Kentucky Academy of Science, and a number of years ago, he started talking to lawmakers about making a correction in some of the designations of state symbols, specifically those dealing with geological matters. The state had made coal the official mineral of Kentucky, even though any geologist will tell you that coal is a rock. And the state had made agate the official state mineral, even though that was also a designation that was in dispute. So Dr. Garrison talked with lawmakers about this issue, helped develop legislation on the matter, testified on it with lawmakers, and as a result, legislators passed a bill this year that makes improvements in the designation of some of our state symbols. So now legislation is approved that will name coal as the official state rock, which is correct. Calcite will become the state mineral, and agate will be known as the state gemstone. So I'll point to Dr. Garrison as an example of what can be accomplished by a Kentucky scientist who takes the time to share thoughts with lawmakers, to make suggestions for improvements in this state. It's something any of us could do going forward on the issues we care about. So I end this with an encouragement to everyone out there in the science community. Talk to lawmakers, let them know about the issues you care about, and make sure our science community has a strong voice at all levels of government. Reporting for the Kentucky Academy of Science, this is Rob Weber.
Thanks, Rob. Now let's hear from J. Scott Miller, physics and astronomy professor at Maysville Community and Technical College in Maysville, Kentucky. Take it away, Scott.
May brings warmer weather and later evenings, making stargazing a perfect outdoor activity. As darkness slowly comes on, we will explore some easy-to-find constellations. Planets are non-existent in the evening skies of May. Jupiter, which has held court in the western sky these last couple of months, has set by the time darkness falls. Mercury, Mars, and Saturn are found in the morning sky before sunup. Venus is on the far side of the sun from us, so remains invisible over the next few months. That leaves constellations to look for. The familiar Big Dipper asterism is well placed high up in the northern sky as darkness comes. At this time, it could be pictured upside down, its contents effectively being poured toward the northern horizon. Fortunately, the Little Dipper is positioned to capture some of this spillage, so that it does not all go to waste. Four stars make up the bowl of the Big Dipper. Extending eastward from the bowl are the three stars that make up its handle. If the skies are dark and eyes are good, look at the middle star of the handle. Two stars, not one, can be seen there. The brighter of the two is Mizar. A telescope reveals it as two stars, but a spectrograph, which can spread out the light from Mizar, reveals that each of those stars is also two stars. The light from four stars combined to make the single Mizar. The dimmer of the pair is known as Alcor. A spectrograph can spread its light to reveal that it too is a binary star system. So to our eyes, we have two close stars. But scientific instruments, much more can be revealed. The Big Dipper can help you find other constellations. The two stars that make up the front of the bowl of the Dipper are the pointer stars. They are used to point away to Polaris, the North Star. Start with the bottom star of the two. Imagine a line connecting it to the top star of the two. Now use that separation to march onward about six times. The first star you come to is Polaris. Polaris is also known as the North Star. It marks the direction of north along the horizon. And knowing the direction north, one can stretch out one's arm to determine the directions east, the right hand, and west, the left hand. South is to your back. Every night, one can watch the slow movement of stars around the North Star as it remains fixed in the sky. Another advantage to finding Polaris is that its angular height above the horizon is the same value as one's latitude. To experiment, hold your arm outstretched in front of you. Turn your hand so that your thumb rests on the horizon. The width of your hand is 10 degrees. Now move upward toward Polaris by putting one hand above the other in the same orientation, your thumb parallel to the horizon. You will find in this area that you may get three hands high and roughly half a hand more to come under Polaris. Polaris is also the end of the handle of the Little Dipper. Sweep under the Big Dipper two more stars to complete the handle. In front of these three stars are four stars, nearly making a square in shape. Recall I said it should be under the Big Dipper's bowl to catch the contents spilling toward the northern horizon. Dark skies away from city lights are necessary to see all of the stars that make up the Little Dipper. If we return to the Big Dipper, following the curve of the handle, you come upon a bright star called Arcturus. It belongs to the constellation Boötes, a herdsman. Boötes resembles a kite in shape, or perhaps an ice cream cone laying on its side. If one continues the curve of the handle of the Big Dipper, the next bright star on that arc is Spica. Spica is the brightest star in the constellation Virgo, the Maiden. Virgo suffers from having no recognizable shape in its stars. Perhaps a Y extending up from Spica, coupled to a rectangle of sorts extending away from Spica toward the east. A good star map can help in defining its shape. One last constellation that stars within the Big Dipper can help us find is Leo the Lion. The back two stars of the bowl that are directly below the handle point toward Regulus in Leo. Leo's shape resembles a backwards question mark or sickle. This would represent his head and chest. East of here is a triangle of stars marking the hind quarters of Leo. Beyond this, you will find Virgo the Maiden. These are just a few of the celestial wonders you can see in the skies of May. So get outside, look up, and enjoy the beauty of the night sky.
That was J. Scott Miller of Maysville Community and Technical College in Maysville, Kentucky. Thanks, Scott. Now let's hear from Dr. Eliana Probesco of the University of Kentucky Diabetes Research Center discussing the science of kidneys, their structure and function, and what can go wrong with them. Here's Dr. Probescu.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Juliana Popescu. I'm a researcher specialized in pharmacology, diabetes, and aging. March was National Kidney Month, and on April 7th, we celebrated the World Health Day. So today, we're talking about the health of our kidneys. The primary function of the kidney is to remove waste produced by our body into the urine, a process called filtration. There is another process called reabsorption. Both processes take place in the nephron, the main anatomic structure of the kidney. Simply saying, the substances and water from blood pass in small tufts of capillaries called glomeruli, which are located in the upper part of nephrons, and those useful substances like proteins and glucose are reabsorbed from the terminal part of nephrons, called tubules, and turned back into the circulation to be utilized by tissues. Substances that are not turned back, like products of metabolism, toxins, drugs, or substances resulting from drugs breakdown, and the rest of the water are pulled out and become urine. Well, a healthy kidney can fulfill both function, filtration and reabsorption, at an optimal level. Therefore, kidneys also maintain a healthy balance of water, salts, and minerals in our body. So, how do we estimate whether our kidneys are healthy? In clinical practice, two tests are routinely used to measure, first, how well our kidneys are filtering and clearing the blood, and secondly, how well the reabsorption of good molecules works. The first test, called GFR, standing for glomerular filtration rate, is a blood test that tells you how well your kidneys are clearing waste products from the blood. Values of GFR higher than 60 are in the normal range and show a normal function of your kidney. But values below 60 indicate a kidney problem. It may be an impaired function of the kidney, meaning that it doesn't function at its full capacity, or if it's below 15, it shows a failing kidney, a kidney that doesn't function any longer, and in this case, individuals need dialysis or even kidney transplant. The eGFR, standing for estimated GFR, is calculated based on a complicated formula that takes into consideration the serum creatinine, a waste product of muscles, and the gender, age, height, and weight of a person. The second test measures the reabsorption capacity of the kidney. It is based on the detection of the protein albumin in the urine. Normally, this blood protein should not be detected in the urine, but in the case of impaired kidney function, albumin passes into the urine and can be easily detected with laboratory dipsticks. In practice, the urine albumin to creatinine ratio is used to have a better estimation of kidney function. Well, the gradual deterioration of kidney's function results in chronic kidney disease. People with diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, or a family history of kidney failure are more likely to develop kidney disease. So preventing or correctly controlling these conditions helps you to keep your kidney healthy. Lastly, keep in mind that the kidney is a very complex organ. It contains 51 types of cells, including some rare and novel cell populations whose function is not yet clearly understood. The molecular description of these different cell types, including interactive 3D models of cells, together with their interaction with the condition of a healthy kidney versus a diseased kidney, have been gathered into the new Atlas of Human Kidney Cells, an international research project supported by the National Institute of Health, NIH. The Atlas has been publicly available on the internet since last year, and it helps identify specific subgroups of kidney disease so that investigators from around the world can find new individualized possibilities to treat their patients correctly. It's what we call the precision medicine. So take care of your kidney. Choose foods that are healthy for your body. Limit the amount of salt and added sugars or fat. Be active. Control your body weight. Limit alcohol intake and stop smoking. Limit the stress and allow you enough good quality sleep. And finally, control and manage correctly your diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease.
Thanks to Dr. Iolani Probescu of the University of Kentucky Diabetes Research Center for this interesting report. And now for something completely different, a challenge to you. Hey, Dave Robinson here with a special request of you. How would you like to be on this radio show and our podcast? Or, if you are a little on the shy side, how would you like your ideas to be on our show and our podcast? Well, this show, Bench Talk the Week in Science, will be turning 6 years old in early August. And on top of that, we will be surpassing our 200th episode on July 15th, 2024. Now, I don't know if you regularly listen to Bench Talk, but we always do something special on our anniversary shows. Like during the pandemic, we held a hilarious town hall celebration with thousands of people in attendance, and it was hosted by the grand dame of the stage and screen, Bella Annabella. And another year, I climbed the WFMP radio tower on the Habern building to broadcast the show, but also reported from a pet store, a chicken farm, and from a poetry reading at a hip coffee shop. Of course, that was all virtual. Well, we have a new idea for our 6th anniversary show in mid-July, which happens to coincide with our 201st episode. Our idea is to begin the show reviewing the important advances made in STEM since our first show in 2018. And that's where you can come in. What important discoveries or developments do you think have been made in science, technology, engineering, or mathematics in the past 6 years? Do you have any thoughts on this question? If you do, what you can do is email me your ideas or contact me on Facebook between now and early July and let me know what you think. I can either relay your idea to the audience for you on our anniversary show, or you could actually speak for yourself on the show. But it doesn't stop there. We don't just want to talk about the past 6 years. We want to also speculate about what scientific or technological discoveries await us in the next 6 years. What advances in science, technology, engineering, or math do you think will happen by the year 2030? That's 6 years from now. Again, email me or contact me on my Facebook page, and we can get your predictions on the air. So think about this, about the advances made or will be made in any of the STEM disciplines over a 12-year period from 2018 until 2030. To contact me, you can message us on our Facebook page. Just go into Facebook and do a search for Bench Talk the Week in Science. You can also find my personal page on Facebook. Just search for Dave Robinson and add the word plants, because there's several Dave Robinsons on Facebook. So just search for Dave Robinson Plants. If you aren't on Facebook, you can email me directly at my private email address. It's upator99@aol.com. That's EUPATOR, the number 99, at AOL.com. So, you've got your assignment. Help Bench Talk celebrate being on the air and podcasting for 6 years and for 200 episodes. You can get your name or even your voice on the air. On the other hand, if you choose to be anonymous, that's fine too. We just want to hear your ideas. And be sure to tell your friends and colleagues about this request. We're open to their ideas too. Just contact us on our Facebook page, that's Bench Talk the Week in Science, or message me directly on Facebook, search for Dave Robinson Plants, or via email at upator99@aol.com, EUPATOR, the number 99, at AOL.com. Thanks, and looking forward to hearing your ideas. Well, that's our show this week. This is Dave Robinson for Bench Talk the Week in Science, signing out. Enjoy life after Derby, and see you in our next show, where we're planning on getting back to the topic of air pollution on Louisville's West End. Thank you for listening.